Your Locked On NHL, your daily podcast on the National Hockey League. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is the Locked On NHL podcast, your Friday edition of the show. Joe DiBiase and Tom Gazzola, per usual, covering the entire league. What's happening around the league? There's a lot happening. Trade deadline's coming. Canada finally getting a little leeway, it sounds like. Right, Tom?
Yeah. Isn't that wonderful? And slow and steady wins the race, Joe. Evidently, <Yeah. laughs> we're pretty slow up here with our rollout. So,
but you've got this new rule. CBC, I think, was reporting it the other day that 7-day quarantine for players being traded, which I think is half, right? So it's still 14.
Yes, and that's been confirmed. So, I mean, I still think it's going to be a dud of a deadline, and I know we'll probably get into it a little bit more. Mm-hmm. But yeah, people, you know what? And I know Sabres fans are crazy, just like Oilers fans are. They're rabid. They love their team. They like to speculate. Yep. But as soon as that happened, it was like, well, do you think they're going to make a trade now? Do you think? And yeah. It's like, okay, tap the brakes. Yeah. Probably not.
You did get one trade today. Sabres sent Eric Staal to Montreal. Right. But maybe that's what these Canadian teams will consider. Instead of waiting till deadline day, because you still do have that quarantine period, it's like, why not just get Eric Staal in the door here today? Although I think there was more going on there, probably from the Sabres end. I'll just be upfront with it. Staal has been dogging it all season. I'm not going to crush him for it. I mean, he probably didn't want to be here in the first place, and he's away from his family. He's 36. If he's going to be away from his family, he probably be worth it to do it, to take a shot at a cup. And you really can't be further away from a cup than the Sabres right now. So I kind of get why he's been dogging it, but he had been dogging it. And last night, because the Sabres are just cursed, they had to have their GM behind the bench because they're out of coaches, because Ralph Kruger gets fired and they've got assistants and they've got the interim all on the COVID protocol sheet. So I think the GM got an up-close look at that and sent him packing to Montreal. But that's one example of a deal that happened prior to the deadline. So, more deadline stuff.
Yeah, yeah. But really quickly about Eric Staal, how about him waiving his 10-team no trade to go to Montreal because they were on his list?
Right.
That's how bad it is. And I don't want to dump on you or the Sabres or anything like that. But yikes! Like he waived it to go there. I mean, I suppose he could see his family now. But man. Yikes. Yeah, it's not good in Buffalo. And buddy, I've been through it. Good
luck.
That's
right. His family's right across the border in Winnipeg, maybe?
They're Thunder Lake, I believe. The Thunder Lake, Ontario is where the Staals grew up.
Right. So at least they can, because they're in the same, you know, they're in Canada now, that they would be able to. Yeah. More deadline stuff coming. I've got some prop bets from betonline.ag, our partners over at BetOnline. We've got, what do we got? About half a dozen, five or six guys listed for Blank's next team. And there's some weird ones. Like, for some reason, there's a David Sherrard prop bet. There is a Jonathan Bernier prop bet. Nick Foligno. But Taylor Hall, too. Ricard Raquel. There's some big names on here. So we'll go through that a little bit upcoming on the podcast. I want to go through some of the playoff races across the league, because there might not be many, if not more than one, on the second half of the season. We're really just past the halfway point. So that's all upcoming on the podcast. We got to get to Tim Peel to start here, though. The hot mic incident from earlier in the week, you can't really say fired, I guess. That's kind of how everyone was labeling it when the league came out and announced that he's not going to ref games anymore. But when you look at the context, it's like, okay, well, he only had a month left anyway before retirement, and they didn't really say fired. They didn't even say relieved of his duties. They didn't see any. They just said, "Oh, we're not going to schedule him for games." So, I don't know whether to consider if it's a strong stance by the league, because they didn't have to do anything, because I think it's just generally accepted that makeup calls is something that happens in the sport. I saw 538.com had a really good piece on this the other day that the probability, if you look at the last 10 years of NHL hockey, the probability of getting the next call after you just took a penalty is like 80%.
Yeah.
Like it's clearly a trend in hockey. And I think we just all assume that this happens. So I don't know. I guess I'm on the fence. I don't know whether this is a strong stance by the NHL or not.
No, it's a meatball down the middle belt high that they took a big swing at and tried to knock it out of the park. Basically low hanging fruit, whatever you want to call it. And they use Tim Peel as an example. You're right. He, you know, not writing the words fired in headlines is a way to not get clicks. He wasn't fired. He's just not going to do any more games the rest of the year, Joe. And yep. He'll collect his paycheck until the end of the season. And he'll retire from the NHL. Like that's what's going to happen. And in terms of the makeup call, it's not even a trend, Joe. It is absolutely ingrained into the fabric of the game of hockey across the board. And we're all accustomed to it because we grew up with it. We played using that way of thinking, that way of officiating. And this maybe finally makes everybody step back and actually look at this situation and go, you know, we've been doing this wrong for about 100 years, and it should be changed. That's what this might do. It's been like that in minor hockey. When I played junior hockey, you knew it was going to be like. I played in a really rough junior hockey league, nicknamed the Jungle for a reason, and it was exactly like that. Like if you got what was perceived to be an easy call, and you went on the power play and scored, you were guaranteed pretty much. And like you said, they had it rated at like 80% that the next call was going against you. In this league, you could put it at about 95, the one I played in the Capital Junior Hockey League. And it's like that everywhere in hockey. It is just 100% ingrained into the fabric that is woven through the game and has been like that for years. And now, Joe, you hear about Tim Peel. He's one of the more infamous refs. You know, we hear about Wes McCauley because he has those kind of goofy calls, right?
Yes.
Outside of that, what refs do we really know? I know, was it OJ was one of the ones that was really hated around Canada and in Edmonton, but gone are the days of the Don Kaharskis, Andy Van Helleman, Rob Schick, Carey Fraser, Mick Magoo, Bill McCreary. Those guys are gone. Like you don't know who these guys are. And I had this great conversation with some of the players last year in the locker room, I noticed something one game and it was a practice day the next day. And we were just talking and I asked about, I think it was getting tossed out of faceoff dots or out of faceoff circles and on the faceoffs. And like four players hopped in and just started going crazy on this conversation. They're like, you won't believe the ego that some of these officials have. They get mad at you or take offense if you don't call them by their first name. They won't even talk to you if you don't like talk buddy-buddy with them. And we see it. Like we see the way that some of these officials act. And I don't know if it's for notoriety or they get nervous or want to act up for the spotlight and the cameras. And this is nothing new either, Joe. It really isn't. It's always been like this. So now all of a sudden, this happens with Tim Peel, and I wonder if this starts to move the needle in the other direction, where the NHL, the Board of Governors, the GMs, the executives, whatever competition committee they come up with to tackle this, moves it to the point where they just make these refs basically robots in zebra sweaters, and the ego personality gets completely wiped out.
Yeah, I think, I'm trying to think of who was it. Maybe it was Wyshynski from ESPN. There was a story from like a year or two back about the Tampa Bay Lightning and how John Cooper purposely has their players being very aggressive, almost like a high penalty style, because they think their power play is so good that they want those power plays. They know that if they take penalties, they're going to get the makeup calls, and that means that they're going to be, and they trust their shorthanded unit enough that like they want to play that game. They want to be the team that, yeah, like we're going to give up five power plays, but we'd rather do that, and because we think we're going to win the special teams battle. And you could play strategy with that, just assuming that this is the way it's going to be, and that sucks. You can't have that.
It's not supposed to be that way, but that's John Cooper is just It's not even acting on instinct. It's just knowing how the game is called and always has been.
Yeah, right. He's just taking advantage of the system. He's not doing anything wrong. But the system is the problem in the first place. I agree with that. Peel, by the way, I don't know. I'm not optimistic that this is going to create a lot of change. I hope so, but I'm not optimistic. Peel, he's kind of also an easy guy to make an example of.
Right.
And scoutingtherefs.com, they do a ton of work there on looking at like stats on referees and, you know, the differential between home penalties and away penalties and such. And I was looking at Peel's profile the other day there, and I thought it was interesting. I didn't see anything in his stats that was interesting, but I thought it was interesting in the fact that he's never reffed in the Stanley Cup Finals, and he's officiated over 1,300 games in the NHL. And from what I read, the Stanley Cup Final, they decide that based on merit and what like accuracy of calls and such. And like Kelly Sutherland, for instance, has reffed fewer games than Tim Peel in the NHL, but he has officiated in 7 different Stanley Cup Finals. So maybe that just tells you that like this, especially with him, maybe the merit argument here is not nearly as important as the point that he's retiring in a month.
Right.
Like, is it really setting an example of a guy when he's riding off into the sunset in 30 days anyway?
Well, in a PR way, yeah, it looks that way. But then when you peel back the layers like we're doing, no, exactly. You expose that it's like, no, it's just an easy target. Right. And I know Greg wrote a great article about Tim Peel when he had drinks with him and Peel got in trouble for taking the shot and doing the picture. Peel's a really nice man.
Yes.
He's very smart. I've talked to him a couple of times. I've met him a couple of times. Very nice man. Very smart. Very personable. And even Wyshynski talked about this in his article. Greg said that Tim Peel knew the criticisms that were out there. He would save the Photoshop pictures of him. And he also was aware that he got assignments with a lot of young up-and-coming NHL refs. Mm-hmm. And they are more prone to mistakes. Just like rookies and young players are, or young people are in professional settings. And he was that guy that had to kind of like bring them along. So that never helped his reputation either. And then when you look at the whole NHL Stanley Cup playoffs and finals and conference finals and him not getting those assignments, you're like, well, he got lumped in as that guy that they basically used to groom the new guys. And it hurt his reputation and performance. To the point where they didn't use him past what, first or second round for the most part.
Gotcha. Wyshynski told a great story once on one of his podcasts about that article and how Colin Campbell like approached him and like started berating him about the story and taking the picture. And at one point, Campbell asked Wyshynski, like, well, how did you get him to take that picture? Like, why would he want to do that? And Greg's response was something like, Colin, he was drinking tequila.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. That's the reasoning. He was drinking and tequila.
Joe, that's a fantastic... I'm glad you brought that up. That's a fantastic point. And it also gives you a glimpse to the people, the high-up executives in the National Hockey League and the type of mindset that they have. Colin Campbell has been in the league for decades. He's done everything under the sun in the National Hockey League. He's very highly respected for the most part. I know he's had like the email thing and situations like this, but that's a glimpse into the mindset of the tippy top of the National Hockey League and the way they see things, approach things, interpret things. It's an old boys club still.
Yes.
It's going to change at some point, but that's where we still are. And I'm not knocking Colin Campbell. I'm not knocking the high ups in the NHL. It's just, that's how they were brought up. That's how they knew things were. And they haven't adapted. They're older people. And at some point, the league will turn the page and move on. But that's still where we're at. And that's a perfect little example of that.
Yes. All right. We will take a timeout here. We'll get to some on-ice stuff when we come back. I got a thought on John Gibson. We'll look at the playoff races around the league and a little bit on the Avalanche. Too, kind of stemming from our topic last week about who the most fun team in the league is. I want to talk about the Avs when we come back on the Locked On NHL podcast with Joe DiBiase and Tom Gazzola.
Football may be over, but the NBA, college basketball, and the NHL are in full swing. Bet Online, the fastest and easiest way to bet on all of your sports actions. Bet Online even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. Little embarrassed to say it, I am watching this season of The Bachelor. Lines on a show like that, I'm actually intrigued by for the first time in my life. And BetOnline's where you want to be looking for that. Real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to the website, use your mobile device to sign up today, and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbooks experts. Remember to use the promo code LOCKEDON. RockAuto.com, a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. They got everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique, remarkably easy to navigate, quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle, and choose the brands, specifications, and prices you prefer. Best of all, prices at rockauto.com are always reliably low, and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? Go to rockauto.com right now, see all the parts available for your car or truck, write "Locked On" in their "How did you hear about us" box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com.
Welcome back to the Locked On NHL podcast. Joe DiBiase and Tom Gazzola get the upper hand in your fantasy league with daily fantasy hockey advice from Locked On Fantasy Hockey. Fantasy hockey expert Scott Cullen gives you the tips, insights, and analysis for season-long, dynasty, and DFS leagues. Follow the Locked On Fantasy Hockey podcast on the radio.com app or wherever you get podcasts. One other kind of news item that I just want to bring up here before we get to some of the standings stuff around the league and then Colorado. John Gibson back in the net for the first time in a couple of weeks. He missed six games with an upper body injury. I just want your opinion on this. Like, where are you at on Gibson? Because his numbers lately are pretty bad. But you have opinions all over the place on him, from he's shot to he's the best goalie in hockey. Like, I feel like you'll find people on both sides of the argument there. And I've watched a little bit of the Ducks in the past couple of games. I watched them against Minnesota. I think it was on Thursday night, and they didn't have Gibson and net. It was Ryan Miller, but you could just see they just allow so many chances. Like, the goalies are just left out to dry so often. So I guess I think Gibson's probably just the victim of the team that he's on right now. Right. Because there's no way a talent like that just in his, I think he's still in his late 20s, is just like done the way his numbers would indicate.
Not a chance that he's done. He is a very, very good goalie, elite in the National Hockey League on a poor team. And it doesn't matter how many you stop. If you're facing an onslaught every night and the guys in front of you can't do anything to get more at the other end of the rink, you're going to lose like the Ducks do. And then on top of that, that losing wears on you and it takes away your belief system, your will to win. It gets crushed. You're demoralized and you don't play as well as you do when you're on top of your game and you know you have a chance to win and you're riding that confidence. He is an excellent goalie on a great contract, very team friendly. And if and when the Ducks turn it around, it's probably with him in that crease. And I know, especially here in Edmonton, because the goalie situation, you know, it's not ideal, even though Mike Smith is getting some Vezina whispers, which is incredible.
Oh,
and I'm kind of happy to see it because I'm a Mike Smith guy, and it's been, you know, rubbed in my face a lot on my shows. People say I don't like Mikko Koskinen, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, it just goes to show you how good talent can be wasted or can dwindle somewhat when the team is that bad and the defense is porous. John Gibson is not spent. He's not shot. I guarantee you, if that team picks up a couple of pieces and starts to show better and starts to have better results offensively, the defense maybe doesn't give up that third rebound or doesn't cough up a pizza three or four times a night for a grade A 10 bell chance, I'm sure John Gibson's numbers look better. He is a very, very, very good goalie. And if you could steal him and pry him out of Anaheim, good luck and all the power to you. But no, he's still excellent in my books.
I think I'm about the same with where you are. I wouldn't just go by the numbers here. In fact, you could look deeper into the numbers and you could make the case that you just made that the only goalies, I looked this up with him because I saw, like I said, my eyes were seeing, okay, every chance that they're getting against is just like a grade A chance. But the numbers back that up too. The only goalies with more, this is via net from Natural Stat Trick, only goalies with more high danger scoring chances per 60 minutes against this season are Kevin Lankinen and Thatcher Demko. That's it. John Gibson's right after that. He is facing as many high danger scoring chances as everyone in the league, except for those two. And I don't really ever think about the Ducks. They might be the team I think about the least right now because I don't know. I just feel like they're nowhere.
Like they are. They're also rans. Just in the background basically. And you know they're kind of. And I would lump San Jose into that picture too. You're just like yeah. I guess.
I think so. I would agree with that. Yeah. San Jose's having a rough season too. They've played the Ducks. The Ducks are second last in the NHL. 26 points, third last in the NHL. Yeah, they've been brutal this year. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's get to some trade deadline stuff before we get into anything else because we're still kind of on the Ducks. And Rickard Rakell is one of the names on this list of whose next team will these players be on? And this is from betonline.ag. Rickard Rakell, Taylor Hall. We don't have to go through all these guys, but I think there's a common trend. So Hall, the favorite to be Hall's next team is the New York Islanders. And then there's the Toronto Maple Leafs right after that at plus 300. Rickard Rakell, who's the favorite? The Toronto Maple Leafs. Who's second? The New York Islanders. Nick Foligno, who's first? The New York Islanders. Second, the Toronto Maple Leafs. There's a trend developing here that all of these scorers that are going to be available at the deadline, it's the Islanders and the Maple Leafs. Does that sound right to you? Do those seem like the two most likely teams? Like, oh yeah, they're going to go acquire more goal scoring at the trade deadline.
Right. Yeah. And the, for the Maple Leafs, like I think they're pretty tight against the cap. And I think part of that is coming from the Kyle Dubas press conference where he goes, we're all in, we're going to go for it. I'm going to do whatever I can to get somebody. So as soon as that press conference ended, those whispers became closer to screams to the point where I'm sure that that's what brought up these prop bets or increased the odds for Taylor Hall going to Toronto and Rickard Rakell going to Toronto as well. And then with the Islanders, that's just a good team. In terms of their cap space, they have none. But if they can find a way to create some wiggle room, that might be something that puts them over the top because you don't really think of the Islanders outside of Matthew Barzal as having like these high-impact, sexy offensive stars. Like they have Jordan Eberle, who's good. They have Anders Lee, who's hurt. They have who am I missing here? Like,
did you say Barzal?
I said Barzal. Like he's the one you go, yeah, there's your stud. They have JG Pageau. Eberle. He's good. But you're not looking at them going, geez, these guys are rock stars offensively outside of Barzal. And all of a sudden you could bring in a guy who can be a rock star offensively, like Taylor Hall or Rickard Rakell. It does make sense. But part of the Toronto one, I kind of chuckle because I guarantee that as soon as Kyle Dubas made those comments in his press conference, just like that, the odds went up for them picking up one of these guys.
That makes sense. The Islanders make way more sense for me too, even though they're up against the cap. Like there are multiple ways that they can send salary back to the other team to be able to fit in a Taylor Hall contract. Even if the Sabres were to hold half of his salary, you still got to find a way to create $4 million. Rakell too. You've got to find a way to create that room. The Islanders got guys in their bottom six, like Leo Komarov's making $3 million. Casey Cizikas, 3.3. Kyle Clutterbuck, 3.5. I don't think they'd want to get rid of more than one of those guys, but you send Leo Komarov back the other way and boom, you're affording that contract just like that.
Exactly. And they put Toronto, him on waivers.
Right. They put him on waivers. But the counter to that with Toronto is, who are they sending back? Because all their high salary guys, I would think they want to keep up front. I mean, I guess Alex Kerfoot they could send back the other way. I don't think they'd want to move Zach Hyman, and that only is $2.25 million. The blue line, I don't think they can afford to move anything off of it. So I just Toronto, I struggle with because I just don't know how they create enough space to make a move that size.
Yeah, that's the cap gymnastics that would have to be exercised by the Leafs. And I think they like Kerfoot, what, third line type of center guy. Yep. Hyman, they if they're going to make a run, they're going to need Hyman. He is having a fantastic season. Yeah. And here's the interesting part about that, Joe, is they're going to have to make a choice between Anderson and Hyman, I think, in the offseason. Who do they keep? Because they're not going to have the money to keep both of those guys, especially if Hyman's asking for an uptick in salary after the season he's having.
Yeah, I think you have to go Hyman here. From what I gather from Leafs Twitter, it's Hyman's the answer to that. I think everyone's calling for Jack Campbell to be the starting goalie there right now.
Right. I mean, he's got like 70 career games under his belt at 29 right. years of age.
Right.
It's crazy.
Kerfoot, by the way, is centering their third line right now with Joe Thornton and Jason Spezza on his wings. That's a very strange line. Kerfoot centering Spezza and Thornton. That's kind of funny. Hyman's been on their fourth line for the last couple of games, but he's still having a very good year. And also, I think part of that is they threw Galchenyuk up in the top six to try to get him going.
Right.
And we'll see if that sticks. Because if three games go by and that's not working, then you're going to see Zach Hyman right back in the top six. Galchenyuk, by the way, isn't he already played three games? Yeah, three games.
I don't know.
Three games in. He hasn't done
this
much.
This is like his seventh team this season, so.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on to, before we get to playoff races, we'll look at a team at the top of the standings. I've watched every Avalanche game for the last week since we had our discussion of who the most fun team in the league is, and I've settled on it's Colorado. And I know this isn't exactly what we talked about last week. We were more on, like, who would have the most fun together? Like, what a group of players, you know, like, who looks like they're enjoying themselves? This is not necessarily the same thing, but I cannot get enough of watching the Avalanche. Like, them against the Golden Knights last night, on Thursday night. I'm, like, ready for that game. Like, I can't wait for it. Like, I've been watching the Sabres for so long this season. It's like, you get a crappy hockey game almost every time. It's like, they battled hard. They lost 4-0. And here's Colorado, Vegas, in the Avalanche against a great Golden Knights team, just up and down the ice the whole time. Like, Vegas couldn't stop them. And I Makar is, like, the guy for me. I know McKinnon is the superstar, and McKinnon, don't get me wrong, is awesome to watch, too. But I don't think there's a defenseman like Cale Makar in the NHL. Like, just how dynamic a skater he is, how insane he is at stick handling, how quick he is at it. Like, he really does remind me, not necessarily to the level of Connor McDavid, but the way he skates and the way he stick handles, I think I've said this before in the podcast, it almost like is violent. And that's how I think of McDavid. Like, he stick handles so fast, it's almost violent. So I'm on Colorado. And in fact, on Tuesday's episode with Mike DiStefano, we did a little midseason award show. And I nominated Sam Girard for a top three vote, because he this year has the best 5-on-5 stats in the NHL. And he was asked to fill in for Makar when he was injured, and he did a great job at it. So Girard, too, like, deserves props. But they would be today my Stanley Cup pick. I would pick the Colorado Avalanche.
Yeah, they are excellent. They humbled a very good Vegas Golden Knights team. I'm curious to see when those two teams hook up again, how things go. Here's the funny thing with the Avs is, like, they have so many talented, wonderful players. Makar, exceptional, absolutely. McKinnon, Rantanen, Landeskog, Girard. You bring that up. And you know how we talked about John Gibson earlier in the show in Anaheim, and people wondering if he was spent and done and this and that. Well, here's the opposite of that in Philip Grubauer. I saw a headline today where people were saying, should we be giving Philip Grubauer more attention than he's getting? Where has Philip Grubauer been in the last decade? And now what makes him so special all of a sudden that he should be considered elite? It's the team. And it just shows you both ends of the spectrum. Yep. You've got a great goalie on a bad team. People are wondering what's going on with this guy. You have a good goalie on a exceptional team, and people saying he should be among the elite. It just sways the perception. And I'm glad you brought up the Avs. That came to mind as soon as you started talking about it.
No, you're right. That's a great point. And like, you're right. Grubauer he should be getting more attention. He's second in the Vezina odds right now. Like, that is crazy.
Is he really that good, Joe? Like, he's good. He's fine. Not an elite goalie.
No, yeah, he's fine. You know, like, he's a starting goalie in this league. And he'll have seasons. If he were on the Ducks right now, it would be probably a disaster. But he's on the best team in hockey. So, of course, it looks good. So, no, I have respect for him as a starting goalie, but no way is he an elite netminder in this league to me.
Yeah.
Now, he is important to them because their alternative so far this year has been Hunter Miska, and they just traded for Jonas Johansson from the Sabres, who I could tell you is not going to be a solution. So,
what did John Vogel say about Jonas Johansson, by the way? I just love that tweet.
Oh, what was the exact wording? I think he said something the worst goaltender I've seen with the Sabres since I've been covering them.
Something like that.
Yeah. I mean, he was bad. I mean, he had some very good production in the minors, but up here, awful. So Colorado, like, Grubauer, again, not elite, I agree. They better hope, though, he stays healthy, because their alternatives have sucked so far this year. All right, so there's a little bit on the Avalanche. Speaking of the standings and such, because right now they would play the Wild in the West. That division I see as being wrapped up just because of the quality of those top four teams. Vegas and Colorado up top are elite. Minnesota's having a great season. And then St. Louis is kind of having a middling season, but they're St. Louis. Their possession numbers are still good. They're fourth in that division, and they have a 4-point lead on the Arizona Coyotes. That's only one division that I am starting to see a trend that there might not be a lot of interesting playoff races in the second half of this season. We're just past halfway through, and I feel like a lot is already wrapped up. Look at the East. It's Boston right now in the four spot, and they have a 3-point lead on the Rangers and the Philadelphia Flyers with three games in hand.
Mm-hmm.
You look at the North Division right now, and I don't know, that looks not quite tied up. We'll see what Calgary does, but Montreal right now has a 2-point lead over Vancouver with six games in hand,
yep.
And then they have a 4-point lead over Calgary with three games in hand. So they're in really good shape too. The only division really that you have a serious race developing, I think, is in the Central. But I don't know. Who cares? Between Chicago, Columbus, and Nashville, aren't they just playing for the right to get run over by Tampa in the first round?
Essentially. And my dark horse for that division is still Dallas. I mean, they have a few games in hand. They have an absolutely ridiculously compacted schedule. Good luck if they're able to pull it off. Columbus seems meddling. And Nashville, I thought they were dead in the water a week and a half ago. And I still don't know if I have that much faith in them. It might be Chicago that ekes their way in and then gets crushed in four or five games by Tampa. And Joe, I'll report from the North and give you what's going on the ground here. Out West, they're basically declaring the North Division. Basically, the race is over. We're starting to see those headlines and those discussions coming up after Calgary's loss to Ottawa this week. And Vancouver, I mean, Vancouver's played by far and away the most games out of everyone in the North. And and they're only 2 points back of Montreal. But like you said, six games in hand the Habs have over Vancouver. We're at the point where we're basically saying it's Toronto, Winnipeg, Edmonton, Montreal, and Toronto, Winnipeg, Edmonton are duking it out for first now.
Right. So let me ask you this. This might not even be an answerable question. If I take away the Central, give me who's the most likely team in the other three divisions that's not in a playoff spot to get into the playoffs?
The one that's making a charge right now, and I still kind of don't believe it, is the Rangers. I still have my doubts. Yeah. And Boston's now all of a sudden stuck in the same type of scenario as Dallas, where they get hit with COVID, they miss some time, get some games postponed. They have games in hand, but they're in a tight window. They have a bit of a cushion, not a ton, but I think New York is starting to surge at the right time. I would have said Philadelphia a couple of weeks ago, But I have no idea what's going on with the Flyers. It's incredible to watch them and how they're losing some of these games to New York, these two games that they've lost. My goodness.
Yeah. The Bruins, by the way, I think the Rangers would be my answer too, but part of the point here is I don't think the Rangers are going to make it at all.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the point that it's going to be tough for anyone that's not in it right now to make it. Boston too, what makes it tougher is they're really the only team that you could track down because you're 10 points behind Pittsburgh if you're Philadelphia or the Rangers. And if you want to catch Boston, again, they have three games in hand. They have six games left against the Sabres. They have four games left against the Devils. They're done playing the Capitals, I think. The Capitals might be the ones that they're done with. And they only have two games left against the Islanders. So a lot of their tougher games are done. So
there you go.
The scheduling part of that is going to make it tough for anybody to catch Boston. But in terms of the quality of on-ice play, I think they would be the ones in the East that would be, of course, the most gettable just because of the lead Pittsburgh and New York have built up. So, all right. How's the weather in Edmonton?
It's actually really nice. Golf course is open tomorrow. Yeah,
I'm jealous. We were on a great path. It was like 60 and sunny like 3 days in a row. And then today showed up and it was rainy, cold, wet, like 40 mile per hour winds. Like I literally, the wind was so bad that getting into my car after opening the door and as I'm stepping into the passenger seat, the wind blew my door closed onto my ankle. Like it was strong enough to push my door, like nothing bad. Like I'm not injured or anything, but yeah, weather got real bad. So my golf dreams are pushed off till at least April.
If it makes you feel any better, Joe, I'm going to be a bit of a fair weather golfer and not go until it's like a little bit warmer here. I'm kind of one of those there. I need the right conditions because I don't like bundling up for golf. And it's going to be in the low to mid 50s. This weekend, I think it climbs to the high 50s, maybe even taps into the low 60s. But it's kind of overcast and Tell me how weird this is. We've got like a 59 degree forecast for Saturday with snow.
Oh, what?
I know.
How is that possible?
I don't even know. It melts as soon as it gets within 10 feet of the ground, but that's what the forecast is calling for. So that's courses strange. Are going to be open. They're going to get some moisture. It's bizarre. I mean, in Alberta and Edmonton, you get all four seasons in the span of 3 hours. Like it's incredible here.
That sounds like Buffalo to me.
Yeah.
actually one more golf question real quick before we wrap. How close do you follow the PGA Tour?
Enough.
Okay. Yeah. Did you see what happened on Friday between Dustin Johnson and Kevin Na?
I did not see it. Please enlighten me.
I want to get your opinion on this because I think I have a clear opinion on it, but so it's a match play tournament. And it's Kevin Na versus Dustin Johnson. It might not even be a PGA Tour event, by the way. World Golf Association or something. World Golf Championships. But they're in a match play. And Dustin Johnson putts to within 2 feet, like foot and a half. And he picks it up. Because in most circumstances, in almost all circumstances, in match play like that, the other guy is going to give that to you. Yeah. But Johnson picks it up before Na gives the go-ahead. And Na kind of got in his ear about it. Like, hey man, like you got to wait for me to give you the okay there. Like you got to wait for me to say that's fine. And Johnson and him went back and forth a little bit. I don't know what Johnson's argument is supposed to be. Like, yes, he was going to give you the gimme, but of course you've got to wait for your opponent or your partner to do that, right?
That's etiquette. Dem's the rules. And golf is one of the most stringent when it comes to that. And that's how it's supposed to be done. And DJ should know that.
He does come off as a little bit of a... What's the word I want here? I'm thinking of a word that describes Bryson DeChambeau also. Does that kind of get my point across here? A little standoffish.
DJ's got arrogance, certainly. He backs it up. I've met him. Nice guy.
Yeah.
You know, but he knows how good he is. He knows who he is. And maybe that's part of the swagger. And maybe he slipped up on that one. But I don't mind Nog going at it for doing that whatsoever. I would do the same thing.
And to be fair, by the way, if I were that good at golf, I would be all about myself. So I'm not going to blame it.
One day, Joe.
Yeah, senior tour. Maybe one day if I train enough. All right. Thanks everybody for listening to today's show. Be sure, as always, to like and subscribe wherever you're listening. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Sneaky Joe Sports. Tom is at Tom Gazzola. I will be here next Tuesday with Mike DiStefano, per usual, from Locked On Leafs, and me and Tom will be here next talking to you on Friday of next week. Thanks everybody for listening. This has been the Locked On NHL Podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.